Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's Brian Lehrer, and this is my Daily Politics Podcast from WNYC Studios. It's Thursday, July 16th. With me now is Joy-Ann Reid, who has just been named the new 7 p.m. Eastern Time host on MSNBC. Her new show, to be called The Readout, premieres on Monday. Joy becomes one of the very few black women to ever have been a primetime network news anchor. There hasn't been even one on TV since Gwen Ifill, the PBS NewsHour host, who died in 2016. Joy Reid earned this slot after 4 years of her popular weekend show, AM Joy, on Saturday and Sunday mornings from 10 a.m. to noon. She has good taste in time slots. 7 p.m. on weeknights used to be the hour of Hardball with Chris Matthews, who was forced out in March of this year after making inappropriate comments on the air to the audience and allegedly off the air to women. Joy Reid also hosts two podcasts, Read This, Read That, with veteran journalist Jock Reid, and a book podcast called What to Read. Joy was the Florida press secretary for the Obama campaign in 2008, graduated from Harvard as a film major before that, and has been a guest on this program a number of times previously, including for her two books, Fracture, Barack Obama, the Clintons, and the Racial Divide, and The Man Who Sold America, Trump and the Unraveling of the American Story. So, Joy, congratulations on going from AM Joy to PM Joy, and welcome back to WNYC.
Thank you, Brian. It's always great to talk to you. Yeah, it is. The AM Joy, PM Joy thing, I'll never escape that. That's going to be a hashtag
for life. for people who know the MSNBC lineup, starting with 5 o'clock, there's Meet the Press Daily, 5 Eastern Time with Chuck Todd or Katie Turr, then The Beat with Ari Melber, then will be you at 7, followed by Chris Hayes, then Rachel Maddow, and on further into the late evening. So in that context, or just anyway, what are your goals for your show?
Well, you know, one of the things that's going to make the show unique is that we're only in that lineup that you just mentioned. We're one of only two D.C. shows, and we're the first D.C. show in primetime. So that's going to be different, right? We're going to be situated right near the Capitol. I mean, right now I'm situated in my basement doing it. Mm-hmm. But it's going to be, you know, we're going to be in D.C. I think we'll have a lot more of a D.C. vibe than some of the New York shows because we're going to take full advantage of that location to make sure that we are capturing as many of these elected officials as possible fresh off the griddle when they're coming out of Congress, because I think there are going to be so many issues that they're going to have to deal with. However the election goes, there's going to be a full plate on that next Congress. So that's going to be one of our focuses. But for me, I've always, and you'll relate to this, I've always loved a good conversation, and I've always tried to base, you know, any program that I'm doing around that. So I think that'll remain the core of this show.
I guess the other Washington show must be Meet the Press, right?
Yes, Meet the Press Daily is out of D.C., and then we go back to New York, and then we'll be the first primetime D.C. show.
Right. I hadn't thought about that distinction. So Nicole Wallace and Ari and Rachel and Lawrence O'Donnell and Brian Williams, they're all from New York.
They're all from 30 Rock, yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, not now because everybody's at home, but
right.
In general, these are all shows that come out of New York.
For a network that touts its progressive bona fides, the fact that there has been no black or Latinx anchor in the primetime lineup forever since, I guess, Reverend Al had the 6 p.m. slot for a while years ago, it's, let's say, curious. Why do you think it took so long there of all places?
I think it's the business. I think it's the industry generally. You know, there's a pipeline and a feeding system, you know, that will create a Don Lemon. Right, you know, and
CNN anchor, African American, for people who don't know,
CNN anchor who's in prime, and he currently, up to now, was the only black anchor, brown, black person of color at all in prime, you know, before I got this gig, and so I don't think it's MSNBC in particular. I think it's the business, the pipeline in general for even pundits, quote unquote, has almost never included women, people of color. Very few of us have come through that pipeline, and unless you're in the pipeline, you're not even eligible to host a show, because you first have to be on a lot as a political pundit, get into a fill-in chair where you can, you know, show that you can handle the prompter and handle guests. You know, there's like a whole system. And, you know, I think that the thing we have to fix in this business is that we've got to start to feed more diversity through that pipeline.
I read that you grew up as something of a news wonk, watching shows like Meet the Press and ABC News Nightline. You were seeing only white men in those jobs, maybe Ted Koppel or Tim Russert or whoever at the time. How early in your life, did you imagine yourself in that chair? And how much was the fact that there were no black women, in fact, no black people and no women, period? How much did that fact make you doubt if you could get there, want even more to get there, or anything along that spectrum?
Well, you know, I used to picture myself on the McLaughlin group when I was a kid. You know, this is how nerdy I was. I was like, I want to be on there where they'd say, Joanne Jellybean Lamena, you're wrong, right? You know what I mean? That was one of my dreams, or to be on, you know, those kind of shows, to be on Meet the Press. Like, I always would picture myself there, but it didn't seem odd to me that I would be there, but it wasn't something that was an actual plan. You know, when I was a kid, I wanted to be a doctor. At least I had stated at one point that I wanted to be a doctor. And so I was locked into that in my West Indian household. Mm-hmm. And, you know, what I thought about was becoming a writer and doing that on the side of medicine. You know, that I didn't have it in my plan as a kid to do this kind of a job. You know, I had a completely different life plan. And, you know, once that was disrupted, I was more open to the idea that I could pursue something like this.
And I guess since we're talking about your bio, I should acknowledge that you've been involved in some controversies of your own. You apologized in 2018 for homophobic posts you had written in the past. And just yesterday, a judge allowed a libel suit against you to proceed, filed by a woman whose photo you retweeted and captioned after she was shown at a hearing in California about sanctuary city laws, appearing to yell at a Latinx-looking teenager. I read that you have apologized for the way you might have misread the photo, if I have that right. What would you say the lessons have been for you along the way in terms of personal growth on difference and the judicious use of Twitter, where you are active?
Yeah, and you saw Twitter yesterday had a big shutdown. All the blue check marks were shut down because of problems. Look, social media is both wonderful and dangerous. You can easily, you know, sort of just sort of give your opinion in the moment. And, you know, social media isn't journalism. You're not, like, you know, reading deeply into what you're looking at. You're reacting emotionally to what you're seeing. So I think, you know, I always tell even my kids, you have to be careful with it. But as far as that, you know, I'm not commenting on that lawsuit. We're fighting that. But as far as my own personal kind of growth, I definitely have had the, you know, great the blessings of grace. You know, I always will be grateful to the LGBT community for stepping forward to educate me, to embrace me, to be forgiving to me. And, you know, I feel like that's something I've taken on as a responsibility to give back, to make sure that I'm opening the door to access, because there's still so many stories and so many challenges that this community has. And, you know, that's a door that I can open, just as I'm also trying to open the door to more diversity, to more of that pipeline, to make sure that I'm not, you know, the sort of lonely only out there as a black woman doing what I'm doing in the business.
And people could say that you are part of the polarized media ecosystem these days that is arguably contributing to tearing the country apart, with viewers dividing up into echo chambers hostile to each other. Not to say any particular point of view is illegitimate. Some points of view are illegitimate, though I should also say that. But basically, how do you look at that context?
Well, I mean, here's the reality. I don't accept the idea that what we're doing at MSNBC is just the flip side of what the right is doing. You know, the difference is we have a very strict standards and practices department. I just can't go on television and say wearing masks is a fraud, coronavirus isn't real, you shouldn't be afraid of it, you shouldn't wear a mask. You know, the idea that you can have a party, and, you know, my father was a Reaganite, so, you know, I have plenty of Republican friends. I'm not against Republicans in any way. I'm a Democrat. I'm very open about that. But the reality is, if you're if there's a party that is embracing white nationalism, and that's what the alt-right is, and that winds up in the White House, people who said they're creating a home of the alt-right, and then they wind up as a White House advisor and the campaign manager for the President of the United States, that the open embrace of racism and police brutality and cruelty, I don't think there's a, on the one hand, on the other hand to that. You know, Bishop William Barber always says, it's not right versus left, it's right versus wrong. And what we're seeing in this country, objectively, is the same descent toward autocracy that, unfortunately, we're seeing rear its head in Europe. We're seeing it in Poland. We're seeing it, for a while, we saw it in Italy. You certainly see it in Russia, where they've completely retreated from democracy. And the last thing I'll say is that we've never had a president elected with the help of a foreign power. That's new. And there is no on the one hand, on the other hand to that. That is just absolutely an anathema to what the country is supposed to be. So I don't accept that what we're doing is just the opposite, equal end of that candle. I think we're trying to fight that. And I think we have to fight that. And I think the media needs to embrace the idea that we're one of the few backstops to keep ourselves away from autocracy, from fascism. You can't just let it happen because you want to be balanced and pretend. You know, I used to, with my students, I used to give the story that, you know, you could do a fair and balanced, you know, some people say that strychnine is delicious, and others say it will kill you.
Right.
It will kill you. And so there is no fair and balanced way to approach strychnine, and nor is there a fair and balanced way to approach what we're seeing in the White House and in the administration right now.
Louisa in Richmond, Virginia. You're on WNYC with Joy Reid from MSNBC. Hi, Louisa.
Hi, Brian. Thanks so much for all that you are doing for us in this very difficult time. And wonderful, Joy Reid. I am so thrilled and am so proud and so happy that you will be joining that lineup in that hour. I am a brown girl from Brooklyn, and I never saw journalists. I never had brown teachers in school. I grew up in public schools in New York City, and I'm a retired New York City public school teacher. And I am just thrilled that I'm going to get to see you in the evenings as well, hopefully as on the weekends too. But I am so excited, and you are the voice of the disenfranchised. You're so, the intelligence of your panels, the intelligence of your analysis and your reporting on what's happening politically is giving us life right now. And so I just wanted to say that to you, and I'm thrilled that I can say it to you, and other people can hear me say it to you.
Just
I look forward to seeing you every night.
Louisa, just don't wish a 7-day work week on her. That's all.
I know. I'm taking the weekends off. But I will tell you, AM Joy is going to keep going, you know, until they find a new host. And I'm sure that, you know, the replacement for me will be wonderful. But Louisa, thank you. I really appreciate that. I love teachers. My mom was a college professor, so I love teachers. My godmother taught middle school in New York City schools for 25 years and retired. So, you know, go teachers. Teachers are heroes.
Erica in Rockland County. You're on WNYC with Joy Reid. Hi, Erica.
Sure. Same here. I watch Joy all the time, and I'm from the Caribbean, so she makes me, like, triple proud. I'm also brown.
Yes.
And I'm one of those brown people who've been the only brown person in my doctoral program, and I work in a school district where I'm the only brown person. And sometimes it is hard to maintain that objective stance, and I'm just wondering how she does it and does it so brilliantly, because sometimes I just want to withdraw and not continue to strive. And Joy is such an inspiration, and she makes it look easy even when she is spewing significant knowledge and supporting the cause and being the voice for the voiceless, like the other caller said. And I just want to know, as somebody who's still in the trenches, if she has any advice or any tips that she can provide at this point that would help someone like me, who sometimes feels if I'm still drowning, being the only person and not quite being understood.
Yeah. No, I really appreciate that, and thank you, my West Indian sister. You know, my mom used to be a when she was teaching college. It was in Greeley, Colorado, so she was the only black person pretty much for miles. You know, and we would do all these road trips as kids, and we drove everywhere. We drove to Utah, we drove to San Francisco. We went everywhere in our station wagon, and we would often wind up in places where everyone was staring at us because we were the only black family. You know, and so I even though the town I lived in was like an upside down town. It was created by white flight. So the only white people left were the ones who didn't flee or couldn't afford to flee. Mm-hmm. So around us were mostly black people, brown people, and a smaller number of white people. But whenever we traveled, we were almost always the only black people around. So it can be jarring. Harvard obviously was a very similar situation, 6% black when I was there. The advice that I normally give people who are out there being the only is it can be very lonely. It can feel like you're burdened with always trying to explain, you know, what being black or being Caribbean, being a woman, being the only person, you know, means to everyone else. But I would say, number one, that's not your responsibility. You know, people need to just learn history and learn, and they don't need you to do that for them all the time. But also it's important to create your own circle outside of where you work. Or even inside, if you can create a small even circle of people of color that you can talk to, that you can have these frank conversations with about how you're feeling, to be part of these organizations. And it's so much easier now with social media to connect with people who understand you and to get shored up that way. And don't feel like, you know, you have to explain, you know, who you are constantly and apologize for who you are. But the last one I would say is to really stand up for yourself. You know, don't be afraid to stand up and say, this is unacceptable, this is disrespectful, you know, and you doing that, I think, is the best teaching that people in the majority can get, is to see you stand up for you.
Erica, I hope that's helpful.
Great.
That's
such
great advice on many points there. That was a good, thorough answer to that advice question, Joy. I think a lot of people probably benefited from that. And I see you also host a books-oriented podcast, What to Read. Anything currently to recommend?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I love books. And, you know, I remain a nerd to the end, very proudly. Jacob Soboroff has a book called Separated that it actually broke into the New York Times bestseller list you know, this week. And it's really, I think, an important book for people to read. Just to understand the history of what was done to us as to these migrant children in this country, I think it is it's sad, it's depressing, it's horrible. But I think you should read that. Tiffany Cross's first book, her debut book, is called "Say It Louder." And for anyone who's interested in the media and in, you know, how media has succeeded and failed, but also how it is approached difference and multiculturalism and multiracialism, I would highly recommend that book too.
To kind of finish up in our last few minutes, on the news, you were press secretary for the Obama campaign in Florida in 2008, right? And Obama won Florida that year by about 3 points. He won it in 2012 by less than 1 point. Then Trump won Florida in 2016. I see Biden is ahead there in recent polls. Do you think he needs to do anything to secure a victory in Florida, or just let Trump keep alienating people with his response to the virus and the racial justice movement?
Well, you know, I think Biden's strategy that he's using right now is a sound one. He doesn't need to do a lot. He needs to make statements with enough frequency that we remember that he's there, right? But he is winning by being low-key and presidential, and being sane and being serious. And, you know, people forget that when President Obama, when then Senator Obama won states like North Carolina, Indiana, when he won Florida, Biden was with him. He was on the ticket with him. Biden has already had the experience of winning Florida twice. He's had the experience of winning North Carolina twice. They came very close in Georgia. So Biden has the capability of picking up any state that President Obama could pick up, plus states where Obama fell short because there were not enough voters that were willing to vote for a black president. Biden, because of his demographic profile, his age, being an older, sort of elder statesman white man, can pull in voters who might have been too skeptical to vote for Obama. And so Biden has a tremendous potential path. And so, yes, Biden can win. The only thing that could stop Biden from winning would be massive voter suppression, massive foreign intervention cheating, or people staying home. So you can't control the first two, but every American can control the third. If people vote and people take the chance, mail in your ballot if you can. Line up if you are you know, not you're too concerned to mail in and you're brave enough to do it and you wear a mask. People just need to vote. But anyone can win if you vote for them.
One more call. Papa in the Bronx. You're on WNYC with Joy Reid. Hi, Papa.
Hi, good morning. I did some research on you, Ms. Reid, and I found out that your father was from the Congo.
Yes.
I was born and raised in Africa myself. So what I'm wondering is, one, do you feel any connection with the continent? Two, are you using your clout and position to try to improve the lives of Africans, especially the Congolese, who've been in the quagmire for over 50 years?
That's a great question. I feel a tremendous connection to the continent. You know, I didn't grow up with my father. My parents divorced, and he went back to the Congo after getting his PhD. So, you know, we knew him as a person on the phone. But his best friend, who's now the ambassador from the Congo to South Africa, I'm very close to, and has kept me in touch with the continent. And I have a lot of ideas. I ran into, just this is the thing about being in D.C., right? You never know who you're going to run to. I ran into Dikembe Mutombo, who's also Congolese, in a hotel lobby. And we had this great conversation about the things that he's doing to try to shore up schools in the Congo. And I think between my uncle and Mr. Mutombo and people that I've met along the way, I have a lot of great ideas of things that I would love to do. I would love to connect sort of diasporal sort of outreach, because I think we have to remain connected as human beings outside of just the United States. We need to be thinking about the world. We need to be thinking about knitting together the world so that the world can be better. So absolutely.
And Papa, thanks for your call. And so as we wrap up, I see you're going to do a farewell edition of AM Joy for your weekend viewers, 10 a.m. to noon. Yeah. Is that both days this coming weekend?
Just on Saturday. I'm going to be very weepy, so I'm going to try not to cry off my makeup. But yes, we're doing a farewell with me. The name AM Joy will still stay on the show until September, but mm-hmm. This will be the last AM Joy with Joy.
And they haven't named a new host for this slot yet, right?
Not yet. We're, you know, various people are going to cycle in and out, so you'll see some familiar faces. You'll see Jonathan Capehart. You'll see Tiffany Cross. You know, you'll see a lot of the familiar AM Joy family that'll be filling in. And then, you know, the powers that be will eventually pick somebody new. And then it'll be a new show with a new name.
Jonathan Capehart has filled in here, too.
He's great, right? No, we love Jonathan.
Friend of show. All right. Well, congratulations on the new show. The Readout with Joy Reid starts Monday at 7 p.m. on MSNBC. And thanks for giving us some time, as you must be so busy getting ready for that and your final AM Joy this weekend. Good luck.
Thank you so much, Brian. It's always a pleasure to talk to you.
Brian Lehrer, a daily politics podcast, is an excerpt from my live daily radio show, The Brian Lehrer Show, on WNYC Radio, 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time, if you want to listen live at wnyc.org. Thanks for listening today. Talk to you next time.